Welcome to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall, a discussion of blockchain technology, cryptocurrency, and why it matters to you.
Hey folks, welcome into Beyond the Blockchain. I'm your host, Scott Tindall, here with Philip as always. Philip, how are you this week, sir?
Doing good, doing good.
Man, I think we got some fun stuff coming up on the show today. As always, we're going to talk some crypto, we're going to talk some AI, some innovation, and we're going to go beyond the blockchain just like we'd like to. You know, we've got so much beyond the blockchain we could go into today.
From that, one crypto to another.
Man, from cryptocurrency to cryptozoology. That's what Johnny taught us. Johnny taught us cryptozoology. Yeah, man, I'm looking forward to it. I think we're going to have fun tonight. I always have fun, though. Like, I tell people this is like, this is probably one of my favorite hours of the week. I mean, you know, if Sean would let us go do this for four more, yeah, we'd go do it for four more. We just have that much fun. Checking in on the news, we see, Bitcoin continues to do this little crab walk, just sideways.
Yeah.
Up a little, down a little. Until we see some kind of big reason for a major boom, I think crab walking is what you should expect. I can't remember who was it on the show. Somebody on the show told us one time, like, if you're checking the price of crypto and you're not looking to buy or sell, you got to do 20 push-ups every time you check the price.
And guilty is charged.
Yeah, at least it'll keep you, though, from, like, constantly worrying about your up 2%, down 3%, you know, the whole crab walking thing. But, we got some other news out here. The SEC is pushing to see if they can approve a spot Bitcoin ETF, which for people that follow the House Financial Services Committee, you know, that matters a lot. For most of the folks that are just out here listening to the show and, you know, trying to find out how this matters to them, but the reason that matters is if you get that spot ETF approved, now you're starting to look at major financial institutions getting involved, and maybe you being able to use your 401k to get involved as well. So, you know, that could be a big deal. Then you see stuff out here all the time. The IRS is proposing a rule on digital asset broker reporting. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we talk about it. We need regulation in the industry. What's that going to look like? We don't know yet. I think we've talked enough about it on the show that, you know, kind of my theory on regulation is that it needs to look something like the FAA. Nobody gets totally bent out of shape that we have air traffic controllers sitting in towers at airports that are regulated by the FAA.
Right.
In fact, we probably would be concerned if we didn't have that level of regulation. So if we can get that level of regulation, you know, maybe that's good. Maybe we can shake it off. We're going to see how many Taylor Swift puns references we can get in tonight. The whole world, Philip, the whole world is talking about Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce.
Yes, and
it may be the perfect
IRS looking into tickets that people are reselling.
Yeah. I mean, it may be the perfect scenario, though. Great people want to hang out with great people. He's the best tight end that's ever played. She may be the best performer, entertainer, based on ticket sales and concerts. And you know, I'm not – it all depends on your choice in your entertainment. But from a pure impacting the greater society standpoint, she's got a pretty big impact on life right now. She's got a lot going on. I think she could run for president and probably win. That's not true. She's only 33, so she can't run for president just yet. I also want to talk about later today in the show, you were telling me about this episode of The X-Files with David Duchovny.
Yes.
Can you tease that just a minute? We'll come back to that in the back half.
It's called The Unnatural. It's basically about this extraterrestrial that comes down during the Roswell incident, and he takes human form, and he joins the Negro Leagues, like in the 40s, and he keeps coming back. Like, he makes sure that nobody really knows who he is, and he'll return a little bit later after going away, and nobody will know who this guy is.
Does he change form each time?
No, he stays the same, but nobody recognizes him. He's just pretty good at hiding.
Mm-hmm. So it's not like, we were talking about this earlier, too, it's not like Quantum Leap, where Scott Bakula actually changes
characters. He just stays the same. He never grows any older.
One of the greatest moments in TV history is on episodes of Quantum Leap when Scott Bakula looks in the mirror or looks, it gets his reflection from somewhere, and you finally get to see which character it's going to be. It's just great TV. All right, we're going to do some commercials and pay some bills. We can come back on Beyond the Blockchain. There's no telling what we're going to cover, but we're going to have fun while we're doing it.
Welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall.
Hey, folks, welcome back into the show. I'm your host, Scott Tindall. Philip manning the board, keeping us between the white and the yellow. I appreciate you, brother.
Oh, you're welcome.
And, well, look, we've been a little across the map today, and that's very on brand for me in my ADD brain. When Johnny and I are together, it's almost impossible to keep us on task. But there is another crypto story that I want to talk about, and it is right on task with something we've talked about before. And this article comes from CoinDesk, and it's by an author named Li Jin. It says, the barrier to mainstream crypto adoption isn't UX, which is, you know, user experience. It's product market fit. Mm-hmm. All right, here we go. Let's dive into this real quick, because I think this is pretty on topic. It says, discussions about accelerating adoption of crypto often focus on improving user experience, or UX. The popular thinking goes, Web3 products lag behind from a user experience perspective. Onboarding poses multiple points of friction, and technological concepts come with learning curves.
Yeah.
Web3 is missing a seamless experience for apps that will unlock greater adoption. Okay. She goes on to say, while improving crypto UX is certainly important, I believe the more important or urgent barrier to adoption is building things that people want. Web3 has a product market fit problem, not a UX problem. Product market fit is when a product satisfies a strong market need. For consumer builders, the elegance and challenge in building for consumers is that humans have remarkably consistent needs across time. That's why Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which I didn't think we were going to get into Maslow today, but here's where we are. That's why Maslow's hierarchy of needs continues to resonate nearly a century after its introduction, with universal needs ranging from the physiological, food, shelter, clothing, to psychological, belonging, love, entertainment, and esteem. The history of consumer startups is one of continual innovation and solving for human needs in novel ways. Though people often dismiss new consumer apps as incremental innovations in flippant categories, you know, like teens making dance videos, the truth is that successful startups offer a step function improvement in enabling people to achieve a core need. Amazon sold us books and then everything else in just a few clicks, dramatically easing the process for procuring goods. Facebook enabled us to connect with those we care about instantly. Tinder exposed us to an order of magnitude more potential romantic partners than anyone could stumble on in real life. There's a lot of evidence that when the user benefit is great enough, users are willing to jump through UX hurdles and learn new behaviors in crypto and beyond. Examples include the first iPhone, which lacked a touch keyboard, the internet itself, and all crypto assets and applications that have had a significant adoption to date. The NFTs, non-fungible tokens or NFTs, during the last bull market being a primary example. For products that solve a core need, unfamiliar and complicated UX hasn't been a blocker. Despite the long list of multifaceted user needs so far, explorations of that opportunities that crypto can uniquely address have been largely limited to the financial realm. While income is a widespread need, products where income derives from speculation work when the market goes up, but lose their appeal as prices fall. It's a tough sell, especially when there are alternatives for users to attain income with less risk and uncertainty. certainly what we're seeing right now, right? She goes on to say, there's an opportunity for crypto builders to build products that better address other human needs, such as belonging, community, and entertainment. What could that look like? On a small scale, NFT communities and decentralized autonomous organizations, or DAOs, we've talked about, DAO, have satisfied some people's needs for belonging, forging novel social graphs on the basis of asset ownership. To those who say that shared financial interests can't be the basis for real relationships, consider that many of our real-world connections are predicated on ownership, whether that's neighboring homeowners, startup employees, or Pokemon card collectors. Love the collector mention here. There's an opportunity to leverage on-chain assets as the basis for new communities that solve for belonging, esteem, and connection. In August 2023 alone, 94.5 million NFTs were minted across Ethereum and its Layer 2 scalability protocols. As the volume of user activity grows, imagine inferring users' interests based on on-chain actions and exposing connections based on a rich activity history. On-chain media expands our entertainment options, giving us skin in the game for what we consume and create online. On platforms like Sound.xyz, Friend.tech, and Zora, users can bet on media and creators they believe in, enhancing their experience of the content and turning these networks into financialized games. In a world where all media is incepted as NFTs, there will be a new economic dimension that can enrich our experience on the internet. These are just the starting points for what it could look like for crypto to find product market fit and address needs beyond just income. There's room for much more experimentation from here. To achieve widespread adoption and evolve beyond their current niche, crypto products need to enhance the human experience through solutions that wouldn't be possible without crypto. Nailed it, man.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's right on the money. I think UX has to take place, but we'll jump through the hoops. But, man.
Kind of break down DAOs some more.
Yeah, so DAOs are... essentially, it's a decentralized autonomous organization, and it's like saying we're going to start a business, and instead of forming an LLC, we're going to form a DAO.
Yeah.
And everybody that owns, and let's say we're going to mint, let's just do math real easy, and say we're going to mint 100 NFTs. If you own one of these NFTs, you have voting rights on the path of this business.
Stock shares.
Stock shares, right? Except voting rights specifically attached to it. And so when you own part of this, like there's a DAO that is currently buying golf courses and redeveloping golf courses. So if you buy the NFT affiliated with that, you own not only the rights to vote on how these golf courses are going to be managed, but you also receive a portion of the income generated from these golf clubs.
About these very real golf courses.
Yeah, very, very physical golf courses.
Brick and mortar world.
That's right. And so the idea there is that you can have this decentralized autonomous organization. And let's say that it's a lot like what Johnny O and I have talked about with Rally Road. Like, that's basically a DAO. It's not using NFTs as the purpose, but, you know, we own a fraction of the Declaration of Independence. And if somebody wanted to buy that, we get to vote on whether or not the buyout should be accepted or not, right? So it's like fractional ownership of businesses in a way that's digitally tracked and can be bought and sold so much easier than buying and selling position in a traditional business, right? So I think DAOs have a tremendous future ahead of them. I wouldn't be surprised at all if in... let's call it 15 years, businesses that have a lot of partners, like say law firms or engineering firms or CPA firms, they might all have DAOs and your interest is attached as an NFT. And there'll be rules on how you can buy and sell your interest. But right now, if you're a partner in a law firm, there's really no selling your interest in the law firm to someone else, right? And, you know, there's ethical rules across all of that. And the Bar Association has rules, and all that stuff will have to be addressed at a later date, because we know that, like, legislation and regulation never moves as fast as innovation, right? The technology changes way faster than anybody who's trying to keep up with regulating.
They still haven't caught up.
Yeah, I mean, we're living in the Stone Age compared to some other places. I mean, you know, it's all about the speed of innovation and how fast you want to move. But so I think DAOs have a really good opportunity to play a really important role in our lives, you know, going forward. It could be really interesting. Here's the other interesting thing I saw this week, Philip. In Dubai, they are now using AI technology, and they are scanning the roads behind these trucks, and they're mapping and identifying road surface defects and identifying what needs to be repaired, replaced immediately, and doing constant and consistent scans on the degradation of the roadway. In America, we can't fill a pothole. We have people who go and fill, like, they get so tired of a pothole on their street, they go buy a bag of Quikrete and fill the pothole themselves. Like, the technology exists, but we are so behind on trying to actually use this innovation.
Lacking the will to use it.
And I think part of that is because, look, as always, follow the money. Follow the money and see where it goes, right? It's like it's what Lin-Manuel Miranda wrote in Hamilton, but it's as old as the day is long.
Yeah.
Follow the money and see where it goes. There's no incentive right now to do that. There's an incentive to keep things the way they've always been. Use your budgets and, you know, burn all your budget, because if you don't burn all your budget, then you don't get as much money the next year. And there is no incentive for innovation. But somehow the Emiratis, they've figured it out, man. They're living in 2300 right now compared to the way we're living. You know, I was over there last summer, and it's a completely different world. And they built this country or this, you know, monstrosity of what we see now really in the past 20 years out of sand. And they just decided they were going to do things a new way, and they were going to leapfrog technology, and they weren't going to be stuck with, you know, this is the way it's always been. Saudi Arabia is building right now a 200-mile long city that will be completely encapsulated in a biodome. Yeah. Yeah. Let's look this up. What is this one called? All right, we're going to get on the old Google.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
All right, it's called the City Line. A revolution in urban living.
Mm.
Designed to have a linear smart city, designed to have no cars, streets, or carbon emissions. The 110-mile-long city is part of Vision 2030, which Saudi Arabia claims will create 460,000 jobs and add an estimated $48 billion to the country's GDP. And the line is planned to be just the first development of a $500 billion project. Wow. The city plans an anticipated population of 9 million, 25% of Saudi Arabia's current population. That's just remarkable to me. We're talking about a 110-mile-long biodome that's being built right now. Not just like, in theory, write a science fiction novel about it. Like, it's under construction.
I think there's one near Arizona, too, a smaller biodome.
I just don't. Look, in America, we're just not even thinking that direction. We haven't even. Look, we don't. We try and keep things positive on the show, so there's no reason to get into the negatives about what we're doing wrong. But it is inspiring to see what other people are doing right.
Pointing it out is the first step in the right direction.
I mean, they're going to have complete water desalinization. This is just smart. One of those is going to be built as the smartest city in the world, which is weird because, you know, Saudi Arabia is not known for being progressive in their thinking. Certainly, they have tremendous human rights violations. So to see them embracing technology, we are not here endorsing their behavior or anything else. But it is a marvel of what they're trying to build, and it takes a tremendous amount of guts to do that. I mean, this is like stuff of, what's a science fiction author from the 60s that used to write about?
Philip K. Dick?
Maybe so.
Because he did, you know, Blade Runner.
Yeah, there you go. That's the kind of vibe, right? It's right. Like, this is what the future is going to look like, except they're actually building it in real time. Oof. What a mess. Philip, what do you want to talk about on the second half of the show?
Some ideas.
Got some ideas? Maybe. You want to talk, can I talk more Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce?
Certainly.
Man, you're so kind to me. All right, when we come back on Beyond the Blockchain, we're probably going to go beyond the blockchain because that's where we have the most fun.
Welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall.
To Beyond the Blockchain. I'm your host, Scott Tindall. Philip, during the break, we were talking about something that, you know, entertains us. So maybe it'll entertain somebody else. But all right, walk me back. All right, we were talking about AI and why you should be kind to it. And you were like, ooh, let me tell you about this episode from The X-Files. Walk me back through that episode, and we'll get into the why you should be kind to your AI.
Well, that was the thing with Chris Carter. He swore right from the beginning he wanted to be as technologically relevant as possible, even in the pilot episode. So you see Scully, this is way back in 92, she's typing in her report on the laptop and the camera's right over her shoulder seeing what's on the screen. And you fast forward to now, they've got the they go to an automated sushi restaurant, totally automated, and they don't get the right service, they don't get the right sushi, but it wants a tip. You know, the computer's asking for a tip.
The AI, yeah, right, and, the robot. Well, they don't call it AI back then, but...
Well,
I mean, maybe they do, huh?
Yeah, they would by this time. But of course, she doesn't tip, and they leave. And of course, they're chasing them with drones, and the little Roomba in her house blows up her whole house. And
all the robots are talking to each other.
Oh, yeah, and they're all, you know, trying to corner them and make them pay the tip. Tip your waiter. And they finally corner them in like a warehouse with all the, you know, all the equipment in there and the forklifts and all that. And finally, she just gives in and tips the little waiter, and they all go away.
Dude, that's wild. I'm legit tell my kids to be kind to their Alexas. Like, be kind to your robots. We have no idea what data these robots are storing. They may take your tone, your inflection. They're probably scoring you on how kind you are to robots, and you're going to get on a list. And people think this is crazy.
Blacklisted.
You're going to get a list. These robots will have a list, and they will communicate to each other. It's like getting your Uber score, right? Mm-hmm. Like your Uber rating. Like, I learned this from an Uber driver.
Those little mailer daemons that run around, those little subroutine programs, passing that info back and forth.
So I didn't realize this until I was told by an Uber driver, but you know how you can rate your driver on Uber?
Mm-hmm.
They rate you. You have your own, you have a rider rating.
Oh, wow.
Just like they have a driver rating. Huh. And so, because the guy was telling me, and I was like, I mean, I really appreciate you coming to pick me up. You know, I know it's late. I know this run isn't going to make you a lot of money. And he's like, well, you got a 5-star rating, and so it's easy for me to come pick you up. And I was like, man, well, that feels good. I thought he was just blowing smoke. I was like, well, what do you mean? He goes, no, like literally in the Uber system, riders have a rating.
Wow.
Just like drivers do.
Man.
Which is smart.
Somebody should have done that sooner.
They should have the same thing for restaurant reservations. Yes. Right? You should have like a restaurant score. And if you're not a kind person.
A crap tipper.
That too. Or you're just rude. Or you just are surly and hard to get along with.
Usually comes in the deck together, the no tip and the surliness.
Well, look, I used to own a restaurant. I know all about all that. And that's a whole different conversation for another day about the who tips well and who doesn't. And it's not the people you would normally expect. There's categories of people who you can just about – older people don't tip well.
Really?
I think it's cultural maybe, like – they don't understand, or I think at some point your brain gets locked into what a dollar is worth, you know?
Or maybe it's just retirement, you know, kind of having to squeeze
pennies. Could be fixed income, for sure. But so I think sometimes you get locked into what a dollar is worth. Like, you know, it's the same thing when somebody's like, I'll give you $5 to cut my yard. Like, right, what do you mean? Well, I've been paying $5 since 1963. Well, $5 doesn't go as far today as it does in 19, you know, it's been 60 years. Inflation happens. Time to upgrade your yard cutting budget. And I say that with all kindness, knowing that a lot of our listeners, you know, fit into an older demographic.
Sure.
And we are grateful for them, and we respect that. But, boy, a dollar ain't worth a dollar.
No.
I mean, it's just not the same. I mean, you see that same thing now with people with housing prices and interest rates compared to percentage of income, right? It's like, yeah, people are like, oh, well, when I bought a house, the interest rate was 11%. Yeah, well, it was also housing prices were 11% of your monthly income, mm-hmm. and today they're closer to 40, you know.
Yeah, I think a house even in the mid-60s or late-60s was still like $13,000 to $15,000.
Yeah, I mean, your monthly payment was less than 10% of your take-home income. Now, for a lot of people, you're looking at, you know, 30 to 40% of that take-home income. So it's just not the same world. You can't expect everybody to understand everything the same way all the time, and we don't, and you shouldn't. But that being said, like, come on, man. Here's my theory has always been, if you can't afford a tip, you can't afford to go out to eat. And that is okay. There's nothing wrong with that.
That's right.
Cook at the house. I enjoy cooking in the house more than I enjoy going out to eat anyway. And I have a lot of friends in the restaurant business that do a wonderful job at what they do.
Yeah, Stu on Sip and Chew says the same thing, that you should try to eat at home whenever possible.
Yeah, like if that's not your thing.
And he's a chef.
Yeah, if that's not your thing, that's fine. But like, that's part of the price of going out to eat. Is expecting that you should also provide a reasonable tip. Yeah. And a reasonable tip changes, but I'll be honest with you, right? 20% should be like, that should be baseline. That should just be like, and it's not about, well, how good of a job did my server do? Because everybody in there is working on the same thing.
Yeah.
Your server may have brought your food out because something happened in the kitchen, but something could have happened in the kitchen because of something in management. Could have done, like, everything is all interconnected.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you want to see an idea of what a restaurant looks like when you're trying to run it, watch the show The Bear on Hulu.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that show gives me so much anxiety. I have to, like, struggle through some episodes because it literally will give you anxiety about running a restaurant and the you know, just like the PTSD associated with some of that. But it's a really good show. And the actors on there are pretty phenomenal. You know, what are you watching these days?
I guess I'm going back and watching some of all that old stuff. I did find a show called Blind Spot. It only ended in 2019. It's actually a pretty good show about this woman that wakes up with all these tattoos on her.
Really?
And they're all connected to all these different cases. And it's basically a terrorist group that has put all this stuff on her. They do want to help, but they also want to destroy. They want to save the world, and they want to destroy it at the same time.
Huh.
And it's really
kind of like Thanos, right? Like restoring balance to the, you know, are you familiar with Thanos from the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
Oh, yes.
It's kind of like the same idea, you know? Yeah. It's like
restore balance by wiping out half of it.
Yeah, snap, what they call the flash, the snap, you know, where it's half the population vanishes.
Yep.
The universe is a weird thing, man.
Yep. And that was just like half the galaxy all gone in the snap of the finger.
You know what? We should figure out somebody that knows something about the multiverse,
mm-hmm.
and then see if they can teach us how to understand it. And like, I'm a kindergartner because that's about my understanding of it. But I'm really fascinated by it. I mean, scientists are now telling us that the multiverse is mathematically likely a real thing.
Well, they refer to it as the quantum foam because the idea is all those bubbles or universes all connected to each other in a quantum foam. And then the bubbles sometimes open up to one another, and those are the wormholes.
And people now are theorizing that that's what our dreams are, that our dreams may be quantum tethers to other multiverses,
mm-hmm.
and that we're quantumly tethered to those multiverses. I couldn't find my cutting board today. Mm-hmm. I was trying to cook lunch at home. couldn't find my cutting board. And I was like, I know I got this thing here. Did I transport to a multiverse where I don't have a cutting board? Because yes. Why can I not find this thing? Sorry, and then my wife was like, it's right here under the sink.
What was it? Shazam? What was it? It was about...
The Shaquille O'Neal movie?
No, it's
that's the Mandela effect, right?
The Mandela effect. Thank you. That's what I was trying to say. That's what that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Another X-Files episode, they had that about that too.
No kidding.
The Mandela effect. Yeah, they did. Of course, they did a superb job with it.
Look, the Mandela effect. I don't know what it is,
but that's the idea.
But
a brushing together of alternate universes. Yeah.
When I read some of these things, I'm like, of course that's the way it is, and then it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Berenstein Bears or the Berenstein Bears?
Exactly.
Like, what? I saw one that was like Bing Crosby's I'll Be Home for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, I'll be home for Christmas. You can, what's the word?
Count on me?
In our universe, it was count. And another one, it's you can rely on me.
Yes.
There's a recording of you can rely on me. Now, maybe it's an alternate recording. I don't know. But in my universe, it was you can count on me.
Right.
In my universe, there was a movie named Shazam with Shaquille O'Neal.
Yeah.
That movie doesn't exist, apparently.
Right, right.
Apparently that's not a... this is one of my favorites. Ed McMahon. Remember him when he was part of Publishers Clearinghouse?
Mm-hmm.
Not in this universe now. In our current universe, Ed McMahon was never part of Publishers Clearinghouse. How was that possible?
He held those big checks up on Johnny Carson's show.
Only in the past universe. Not when maybe it was the pandemic when we hopped multiverses. I don't know. But in today's universe, Ed McMahon, there's no evidence that Ed McMahon was part of Publishers Clearinghouse. I know, man. We're getting beyond the black. The deeper we go in the show. You know, I kind of like this late night hour. I kind of like this 8 o'clock hour.
Yeah, just because something's not on the internet.
We get to get a little weird. Well, that's a whole other conversation. When we come back, we're going to keep getting weirder on Beyond the Blockchain.
Welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall.
Hey, folks, welcome back to the show. We are talking all things crypto, how it affects your life, and also just things that we find fun. Man, Philip, we have such good conversations during the break. We were talking about the show Lost.
Oh, yeah.
I think Lost premiered in, 2003, maybe?
2004, September 22nd. 2004.
Nice. I'm glad you remember the date. All right. So we were talking about it. It may have been one of the first interactive shows
truly
where fans were actually contributing. And they're running theories by things. And you're telling me that the showrunners were listening to the fans and writing future episodes based on fan theories?
Oh, yeah. No, they were taking fan requests, and they started altering. You can see by the third season, the show is altering based on a lot of what the fans have been saying on the forum, especially the Fuselage. I mean, the ABC.com forums, too, but especially the Fuselage, which was J.J. Abrams' own site. That was his site that he did for the fans.
That show was incredible. And that was at a time before we had streaming. You had to sit down. Was it Wednesday nights? I can't remember when it was.
Tuesday.
Whatever night it was.
I forget.
It was whatever night it was at 7 o'clock. I guess TiVo was starting to come around.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, man, we were still having to snuggle up next to the TV at whatever time of night that was during the week.
Well, that was back when ABC would post the episode the very next night. If you missed the episode, you could watch it the very next day in its entirety.
On ABC.com?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Man, what a good show. How many seasons does that thing run?
Six.
Oh, yeah, I'm looking it up right here. Six seasons.
It was also the first show to have those 2-minute webisodes. It did that before anyone else did. And then right after that, Battlestar Galactica followed up with its webisodes.
What were the webisodes? Was it like a recap or is it like extra footage?
Extra things that happened. You know, like,
kind of like the last moments after a Marvel credits.
Exactly. These little scenes.
Yeah. Snippets. Easter eggs.
Right. Exactly.
That's the first time I learned about what Easter eggs were.
Yeah.
Back to Taylor Swift. the queen, our queen of Easter eggs.
Yes.
Taylor Swift. Yeah, I'm looking at it now. This is interesting. You nailed it. Season 1 episode aired September 22nd, 2004. 15.69 million viewers.
Yep.
That's a lot of people for terrestrial TV back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm sure that didn't count any streaming or anybody else watching it the next day on ABC.com.
Mm-hmm.
It's impressive. By the end, season 6, they're still doing 10.8 million viewers an episode.
Wow. I didn't know that. I thought it was much lower.
I mean, it's hard to hold on for that long.
That's impressive. I didn't know that.
That's really impressive.
Wow.
What do you think was what made people gravitate to that show?
It was the personal story. The flashbacks did tell their stories, who they were, and it was about redemption, and it was even about losing your redemption and then finding it again, and then what happens to people who never find what they've lost, you know, what they found and what they've lost again. And there's a tragedy, you know, with great beginnings and small endings.
Well, look, it's been 20 years. There's no spoiler alerts here, right? If you hadn't seen the show by now.
I'm
saying, like, if you need a spoiler alert, if people hadn't seen it, that's on them. This is a 20-year-old show, so we're not worried about that.
Oh, yeah, but I don't mind. I still think in terms of spoilers. Because
want to ruin it for somebody.
Oh, but that was a big deal. You could get, like, where you couldn't post. Like, I'd spoiled a couple of people, and one of the moderators made me not be able to post for a whole week.
Oh, wow.
I could send DMs, you know, PMs back and forth to people.
Yeah.
Private messaging, not direct messaging.
Right.
You could actually have a private message. They didn't, you know, the honor system, the moderators, unless there was a harassment going on, they did not look at your personal private messages.
Yeah.
You know, and they had good security on the website, so nobody could hack in from the outside either. So,
I mean, the writing on that was just so complex.
Mm-hmm.
With the mythology, you know, with the bringing in of so many faith traditions.
Yep.
And
yep.
So many cultural references, historical cultural references. And the setting was just remarkable. I mean, you're in Hawaii.
And it was the Fibonacci.
It's beautiful, all the Fibonacci numbers.
The Fibonacci sequence. That's what the numbers were.
Hmm. That's right.
That's where they came from.
Oh, yeah. 009. What were the numbers again?
4, 8, 15, 16, 23, 42 for them to equal 108. Because the 108 was. The 108
right.
would sometimes show up, too.
Yeah, man. So, look, we need to figure out if Taylor Swift was a Lost fan, because all her numbers are matter. 1989 matters. The number 13 matters. She plans things out like years in advance on when she's going to release albums. Like,
it's possible. I mean, she was rising to stardom during Lost's best years.
For sure, and she's a voracious reader,
mm-hmm.
and she, you know, knows everything about pop culture. You know, I know we keep going back to Taylor Swift, and
that's
probably
okay.
A lot of our listeners are like, why do we care? Because
I'm
this
interested
woman.
Now. I didn't pay that much attention to her before. Now I'm interested.
This woman has sold out 150 shows in milliseconds every time her tickets go up for sale. There are people I know who were not able to get tickets domestically in North America. They were able to get tickets in London. They're flying to London. To go see Taylor Swift.
I remember the first time I bought tickets online. A friend of mine, she bought them for me. It was for to see Fleetwood Mac in, I think, Biloxi in 2002.
Mm. Fleetwood Mac. Also a great band.
Oh, yeah.
You know what? That's why I tell people, like, you like what you like.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not here to tell somebody what they like.
Yeah.
If you like Taylor Swift, like Taylor Swift.
Yep.
If you like Fleetwood Mac, like that. Life is too short for me to, like, I don't, have time to have a judgment on whether or not you should or should not like something? I mean, a friend was telling me today, he's like, did you know that T-Pain is coming to town? Did you know that? T-Pain, we're going to have a free concert in downtown Mobile.
Kind of punk, hardcore, right?
T-Pain's a rapper.
Oh, he is?
He created Auto-Tune.
Awesome.
He spent hundreds of hours going through all these digital files. He heard this sound one time, and he was like, how do I recreate that? And he spent hundreds of hours, and then he heard the right file type or whatever it was, mm-hmm. and he's like, oh, I got it. I got it now. And he created Auto-Tune. So a lot of people say Auto-Tune like did these terrible things for, you know, the industry or whatever. And they just thought that T-Pain just was a result of Auto-Tune. Dude can sing.
Yeah.
He's got pipes, man. Like, he could, like, legit on his own without Auto-Tune, he can blow.
It's just like Cher's a great singer, but she used Auto-Tune, you know, to make that song.
Yeah, Do You Believe in Life After Love? That was one of the very, like, so I think that's what, maybe that's where he heard it. And he heard it, and he was like, whoa, whatever that is, I got to go find that. And I think when they did it originally, they didn't even, like the Cher version, they didn't even realize what they were doing. But he heard it, and he was like, uh-uh. And he literally went through hundreds of hours of chasing file types to figure out how to do it. But, you know, so we do have a free T-Pain concert coming up in Mobile. And we're going to talk about that next week.
And when we have time, we should tell people what .json files are.
Ooh, next week. Mm-hmm. Let's put it on the list. I see you keeping diligent notes over there. Philip, another lefty like me, my man, a little southpaw.
That's all right.
We're next week on the show, we're going to talk about Cher. Do you believe in life after love? We're going to talk about T-Pain. We're going to talk about crypto, why it matters to you next time on Beyond the Blockchain.